Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of Pure Vacations podcast. And I am Dan Pratt, the COO of Pure One Group. I'm joined by Wesley Baker, who's the CEO of Pure One Group. And we're also joined by Doris, who will be talking all about Zambia and the inspiring place that it is. So on today's show.
So I had a little bit of a crush on her as well, Dan. Would you believe that?
So as far as gushing water goes, that's a lot of water to be falling.
It's a lot of water.
Do I not get a return ticket? No, you only need one way.
You'll think it's small.
Yeah, lions don't eat cars.
Zambia means something to me. And I'll tell you the story now.
Journey with us to the corners of the earth, where stories come alive and dreams take flight. From the bustling streets of Tokyo to the serene shores of Bora Bora, every destination has a tale, and we're here to share it. Brought to you by the man who's trekked the peaks, dived the depths, and explored the vast expanse of our beautiful world. Here's your captain for today's adventure, the seasoned traveler and the voice of voyages, Wesley Baker. And alongside Wesley is Dan Pratt.
I just want to say a big thank you to everybody for being here. And how are you doing, Wesley?
I'm doing very well, thank you. And it's lovely to be back on the podcast again. We've had a few weeks where there was a bit of a gap, so it's great to be back.
Perfect. And Doris, yeah, so welcome. Thank you so much for your time today to be here. And so tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do.
All right. Thank you very much. Nice to be on this podcast. I'm very excited and look forward to the conversations we'll be having today. So my name is Doris Coffey. I'm First Secretary of Tourism based at the Zambia High Commission in London. So my portfolio is about promoting Zambia in the UK destinations.
Wow. That's great. That's so from our listeners' point of view that don't know too much around where Zambia is geographically and what has the country got to offer, just give us a bit of an overview of Zambia.
So Zambia is located in Southern Africa. And not sure how many of our listeners would know where Africa is, but in Southern Africa, and we have eight neighbors. So the country size is about 752,000 square kilometers. I think to bring it closer to home here in the UK, considering that miles are utilized, it's about 470,000 square miles. That is to give the context to size. We have eight neighbors. What that means is that we have a central location. So once you descend into Southern Africa, it's easy for you to go from Zambia to eight of those countries. And one of our nearest, nearest locations within Africa that is, I think, most commonly known is South Africa, which is 2 hours away by flight from Zambia. You've been to South Africa, so you missed the opportunity to come to Zambia in just 2 hours by flight. And we have daily flights between South Africa and Zambia from the hub in Lusaka, which is our capital city, and Livingstone as well, where the Victoria Falls is.
Excellent. Now, I'm going to come in here because of, just before we came on to start this podcast, we spoke about either Dan or I have been to Zambia, and we both haven't, but I said Zambia means something to me. And I'll tell you the story now because I know you were very eager to hear it. When I was at school, when I was in infant school, we had this girl that went to school with me, and all she kept on about was in Zambia. She went for infants and junior. So she came from Zambia. She was a white British family that must have moved out there at some stage and then lived there and then came back. But she was missing Zambia so much. But every conversation she had was in Zambia. And I remember hearing everything about Zambia. So I always thought to myself, wow, this country seems amazing. And she always had this beautiful tan as well. So I had a little bit of a crush on her as well, Dan. Would you believe that?
But, that's surprising.
Thank you for that. Yeah. Is she still accessible? I'd love to meet her.
I don't know. I don't know. I lost touch with her. So
It's a long
that's
time, I suppose, right?
45, 50 years ago now. So yeah, that's a
It's
long
a
time
long
ago.
time. It's a
Yeah,
long time, but she did a
but
good job.
she did a very good job of promoting your
Yeah.
country. So I'm gonna ask a question to you. So why Zambia? So what I mean by that is, for someone who has never visited Zambia before, what is it about the country that makes visitors fall in love with it and return again? Because I know Zambia gets a lot of return visitors. So what is the attraction for someone who hasn't visited before? Why would they come? What their first visit to Zambia? What should it be?
Yeah, so why Zambia? Wildlife. We're very big on wildlife. The country has 20 national parks, and the total land area representing these 20 national parks is almost 65,000 square kilometers.
Wow.
And in addition to that, we have areas that are connected to these national parks that are referred to as game management areas. So when you add the total land area for game management areas and the national parks, the total is over 200,000 square kilometers, which is about 30% of the total land
It's
area of the
huge.
country. So that's how, yes, that's how big wildlife protected areas are in Zambia. And it also translates to, wildlife safari experiences that the country offers. Unique, I must add. Yeah, so one of the biggest things about wildlife in Zambia is that Zambia was the pioneer of what is now commonly known as walking safaris. That was in the early 1950s,
How
the
interesting.
original walking safari.
I did not know that because one of my next question I was going to ask you is what makes Zambia different from the destinations that are offering the same sort of thing, the safari experiences. But you've kind of answered that a little bit now already. So you're saying the walking safari is really the home of
Yeah,
it, is Zambia.
so that's perhaps I'll dwell on that first as I still have to tackle the question on why Zambia. So other than wildlife, we are the shared home of the Victoria Falls. The Victoria Falls is one of the seven natural wonders of the world and the only one in Africa.
That's that
So
small waterfall, isn't it? It's the small one, isn't it? Well, Victoria
you
Falls.
think it's small?
I'm just
No
joking with you.
way. Let me
I'm
give you
just joking with you.
context. Let me give you context.
I'm
It's
playing with
not
you.
the So the Victoria Falls are 1.7 kilometers wide, and 1.2 of that width is on the Zambian side.
So as far
I
as
didn't know
gushing
that.
water goes, that's a lot of water to be
It's a
falling.
lot of water. So at
So
its peak,
the other side is Zimbabwe. Is that
it
no,
is Zimbabwe.
yeah,
It is
okay.
Zimbabwe. Yeah. So,
But they don't have much. But they promote it. They've always been promoting Victoria. But really, it's you guys that have the most of it.
they also have a fair share of the waterfall, but my role today is to talk about what is in
Yes,
Zambia.
exactly. Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Carry
So,
on. Carry on.
yeah. So as you were mentioning that should be a lot of water going over the falls. Indeed, it is, because at its peak, which normally would be right after the rainy season, that would be in the months around April, May, going into June. So you have about 550,000 cubic meters of water volume in terms of volume falling over the edge into the Victoria Falls.
Apart from the spectacle, which obviously looks incredible, what other things are based around Victoria Falls? Is there like boat trips? Is there kayaking? Is there what can people do around that location, that wonder specifically?
Yeah, Dan, they kayak over Victoria Falls.
And
That's the
not
fun
over it,
part.
but I mean like
Lots.
at the
They don't come
bottom of
back. That's they don't. They're not repeat business.
it.
They're one-time visitors.
It's a one-off trip.
Lots.
You only ever sell one ticket
One-way
per
ticket.
person.
Yeah. When they buy the
Lots.
excursion, they say when they buy the excursion, do I not get a return ticket? No, you only need one way.
Yeah, they don't need a customer service team either. They don't need any follow-up support. They
Over.
Yeah, so
sorry,
it's
we're playing. Come back.
yeah,
Come back to the
it's
truth.
okay. Yeah, it makes the podcast fun, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, so the Livingstone, where the Victoria Falls is like the adventure capital for Zambia, because Around the Victoria Falls, there's just lots of adventure that you can do. You can take, first and foremost, because of the Victoria Falls itself, you can do microlight flights or helicopter flights above the Victoria Falls. So you can see the Victoria Falls aerially. And then on the land itself, you can get closer, up close to the Victoria Falls. There is one of the areas, the viewing area, that is called the footbridge, which we get privileged to have because it's not available on the other side. So this one brings you closer to the curtain of water. So you find that during the months when the volume of the water, the Victoria Falls is at its peak. In this area, you need a raincoat. So if you're not that kind of person who, or rather, if you are that person who gets bothered by being wet from either showers or rain, so you get a spray because of that huge volume of water that is falling over. So it creates a spray that is almost a rainforest around the area where that is the closest to the Victoria Falls. But don't worry about carrying anything to protect you from that water, because we do have service providers around the falls that will provide raincoats and Crocs, so that you can change from your standard shoes to go into, shoes that are, or rather shoes that are fit for purpose at the time you're viewing the Victoria Falls when the volume is very high and at its peak.
Okay, that's really interesting.
Yeah, that's one of the things. That's two things so far I've mentioned. You can also do whitewater rafting. I do believe that some of the best whitewater rafting is done in my country. And some of these whitewater rafting trips can be done for either half a day or full day. Then you get to see, you get to experience a more challenging whitewater rafting experience. Other than that, you mentioned kayaking, we have abseiling, we have high wire. We have the longest bungee jump in the world at 111 meters. Wow. This is off the bridge at the Victoria Falls. This is like the bridge itself is what connects the two countries that are shared homes for the Victoria Falls. And you can do quad biking. After a hard day of all these hardcore adventure activities, you can now calm down your day by taking a sunset cruise on huge boats that can take up to 100 people. So these are sunset cruises that come with drinks, snacks, and the sunsets, I must mention, are absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, I bet they're beautiful.
Yes, the shadow on the water of the sunsets are really, really beautiful. And to actually watch the sun setting, there's a point where the setting is going slowly and then it just goes quickly all
it just
down
disappears off the edge, doesn't it?
Yes, yeah.
You have the magic hour afterwards, which is when you get
golden and orange,
the change of colour.
Exactly. And you remain with like an orange button looking like, which you now, but just that moment of watching it set, from moments of moving slowly and then fast into setting, is really, really spectacular. It's one thing that I look forward every time I go out, either to wildlife protected areas or to the Victoria Falls. It's something that I look forward to at the end of each day. It's different, okay. It's special. Yeah.
Do you hear it? The world is calling. From untouched beaches to the heartbeats of age-old cities, Pure Vacations is your gateway to authentic travel experiences. We don't just take you to destinations. We dive deep into their soul. With expert insights, local secrets, and mesmerizing tales. Our online travel blog is your compass to the world's wonders. Pure Vacations. Discover. Explore. Be inspired. Your journey begins here. Visit purevacations.com.
So we've covered Victoria Falls. We know about the lovely wildlife stuff, but can you give perhaps two or three lesser known places in Zambia where people should look at going for an international, that haven't had the international attention maybe they deserve? You may not have it, but I'm just assuming that you will. Country of your size may start
these
areas.
So I'll begin with Kasanka National Park. It's one of the 20 national parks and one of the smallest as well. This is where the largest mammalian migration in the world takes place annually. So the fruit bats in this migration begin to fly in around October, and at their peak, which will be towards the end of October to beginning of November, we get about 10 million.
Wow.
That must be an incredible sight to see. That must be
out of the sky. Must be blacking out the sun.
Yes, covering a huge surface area up in the skies.
Wow.
And even when the sun sets as well, we get this beautiful picture to behold. It's a lovely scene to behold. So in the morning, there's so much noise produced by these fruit bats, and they're attracted to this area, as far as I know, for feeding.
Yeah.
And as the name suggests, fruit bats. So we have so many wild fruits at this time of the year.
So it's not a good time to eat an apple, right? When that's happening in October, you don't want to be eating an apple down in Zambia.
You might get
10 million fruit bats in.
No, you
can. Should be dive bombing.
you can eat your apple. I think peacefully, in that you are holding the apple, so you are not a tree. They are actually going to fruit that is sitting on its original.
So they can definitely tell the difference between. So they can definitely tell the difference
and
between trees and people.
And feeding. I'm sure they do have that intelligence. Whatever science that is, I think they do have that intelligence. So
I think that's what I like the best.
It would be nice, but I think I like that you say you wish it could land on you, but I doubt, because they seem to have so much precision how they handle their fruit eating visit or vacation. I might as well put it
as
vacation.
Well, aren't they? They're massive. They're big bats.
They're not very, very big. But when you stretch out one fruit bat, because of the wing, they sort of, you see that.
It looks bigger than
I don't know
than
whether that
is.
Will translate as big. Yeah. So the wings, of course, they do stretch widely, and in that stretched status, then you are able to say they're perhaps big.
Yes.
Yeah. But it's such a lovely, it's phenomenal. I've had the experience. I've never seen anything like it before. And during that period, this small park attracts a lot of filming film crews from different parts of the world. It's something that they look forward to see. Obviously, some of these fruit bats have been put with sensors to monitor where they are going, because there's so much science being studied to really understand the behavior. Why do they come? Why do they fly into Zambia at this period and then begin to leave at the beginning of December? So yes, of course, there are these wild fruits, but what other factors would be causing these fruit bats to come to Zambia? And this is a small park, holding up to 10 million fruit bats in such a short spell of time. It's amazing.
Park is October through before early December. So really October into early November is the best.
Yeah, but the park itself is fully operational all year round, but lesser known, and comes to life fully during this period of the migration.
Well, we can't wait.
So the other lesser known.
Yeah. Yes,
So the other lesser known would be Liuwa National Park. Liuwa National Park is the host of Africa's second largest wildebeest migration. So it's good to say Africa's second largest wildebeest migration, but maybe just to add context in terms of size. So there's only about 47,000 blue wildebeest migration. And I'm saying this because I'm not going to mention the country, the biggest in Africa. They host
Well, we don't
those
want them having the
millions. We
attention. This
don't
is all about
even want to
Zambia.
talk about that. This is about Zambia. So this is a beautiful spectacle. Liuwa is one of those national parks, small as well. And it's off the beaten track. So it's not your usual kind of national park when you get to Zambia. If you drive through this national park, there's probably your vehicle only and no other. So, in terms of wildlife species, also doing very well. There's also a very interesting story out of Liuwa National Park. There used to be a resident lady lion in the park that was known. Well, still known, even if it passed, Lady Liuwa. For a long time, this was the only lion in that national park. And eventually it became comfortable, being around people or visitors that came into the park. So it would be found near the camp areas, including campfires. But sadly, the Lady Liuwa passed on around 2017. But before it passed, lion species were reintroduced into the park. So it had become part of the pride in that national park.
Yes.
Yeah, so
Interesting.
Liuwa National Park. Yeah.
Quick question around that while we're talking about lions and on that topic. When I was in South Africa, I went on a safari. I was lucky enough to see the big five, and but we were in a jeep and we were just driving along, and there was a lion sitting there. And I did the doors and windows were all open, and I said to the guys, like, "Are we safe in the car?" It's like there's a lion literally there with no windows. He's like, "Yeah, lions don't eat cars, so it won't be coming anywhere near you." And I said, "Well, like, do you have a gun? Do you for protection?" He's like, "There's no need. Honestly, it's completely fine." So I was like, "Okay, cool, trusted him," and it was great. But seeing those animals from inside a vehicle, it must be so different. You mentioned the walking kind of around the safaris. It must be so much better being so absorbed into the nature rather than being in a diesel vehicle. So, do you want to just elaborate on that a little bit? Because that sounds really special.
It is. So when you go out walking safaris, we're very mindful that this is in a natural habitat. That is the home of wildlife. We are the intruders, so we really have to behave very well, not to annoy the wildlife and do what otherwise would then be dangerous to us as visitors in the park. So whenever walking safaris take place, what first begins is the host will actually take you through the safety tips of how to behave, what to do, what not to do on that trip. And then you are accompanied by an armed game scout. These are trained, they know what should be done, when, and how. And then also you have a professional safari guide who's equally trained and certified, who knows the area. They can explain the vegetation well, fully, the flora and fauna in the area. So what is important is that you are told what the do's and don'ts are. So as you set out, you know that in case of anything, you have these two people in your walking trail. So that will be importantly the professional safari guide and the armed game scout. So this is really done under very, very safety conditions. It's very, very important that the safety of the visitors or people who are walking, participating in this activity is achieved during each walk.
Sounds very special as well, and just the noises and the sounds and the smells, it must be
Yes,
truly
and
amazing
getting
experience.
closer. Yes, what I like about walking safaris is, being on the ground, identifying The footsteps of the different animal species, even the droppings as well. It's very interesting that this, just as these different, these animals are different, even their footsteps, their droppings are different, their behavior. And as you walk around the vegetation, you get some of the clues. Like if you see an area that is almost becoming open, the trees are shorter with less leaves, you know that all these animals that are usually grazing and browsing have been in that area, because then they're like a giraffe can graze and browse as well. Browsing, especially in terms of its height, it can go the highest than any other animal. The elephant is forever feeding. I've just lost the figure how much it can feed in terms of kilograms per day. So it's always, looking for food. So you find that in that area where these animals, are in huge numbers, just the outlook itself will give you clues what sort of wildlife is in that area.
That's really good. Giraffe's my little boy's favorite animal, and his second favorite animal is a zebra. So he's absolutely obsessed with animals. I really want to take him on something like this one day when he's a bit older.
And I hope it will be Zambia.
It needs to be. I think it needs to be after this conversation.
So other than walking safaris, obviously we also do game viewing by vehicle. And also in areas where there's a river or water body, we also do those by boat. So talking about that, we have the Lower Zambezi National Park, which combines all these, game viewing formats in this one national park. So you can do game viewing by boat. There's so much you can see on the water, the hippos. By the way, Zambia has the largest hippo population in the world. There's only about 40,000 hippos in the world, and almost 30,000 of those are in Zambia.
Wow.
Yes. So lots of hippos in our water bodies, the Zambezi River especially, and you might wish to, in case you don't know, the Zambezi River, its source is actually in Zambia. This is the fourth largest river in Africa. It's the spring where it starts flowing from is in Zambia.
Fantastic.
So it leaves Zambia at some point, re-enters Zambia before it finally leaves. So Zambia is our river of life. Most of these national parks have access to the river directly, or some of the rivers or water bodies that get their water.
It's the lifeblood of Africa. River. It's basically lifeline of Africa, lifeblood of Africa.
It is being the fourth largest. It is, especially in Southern Africa. And Zambia also, talking about context, when I was talking about location, Southern Africa, we hold about 30% of the water in Southern Africa. And Southern Africa comprises 15 countries, by the way. And then this is where people would say, and most people will refer to Zambia as being landlocked because we don't have access to these huge water bodies. But we believe we are land-linked because with all these 8 neighboring countries, you can literally get to, all these other countries by air, driving within a short period of time.
Okay, that brings me on to two questions I'm going to ask you. The first one is access from the UK and Europe to Zambia, how one does that. And the second thing, culture and people. One thing travellers often remember most is the people they meet along the way.
Yes.
And, so what do you think visitors are most surprised about when they come to Zambia and the culture and the hospitality?
Okay, so I'll begin with access, considering that you presented two questions. So in terms of access directly from the UK, we don't have direct air access, but we have connections, seamless connections via, big hubs. One of them in Africa is Ethiopian Airlines in Addis Ababa. So daily connections from either Gatwick or Heathrow. And also we have through the Gulf, which is currently taking, I think a few passengers are going through that hub, but they do fly to Zambia daily. That's both Qatar Airways via Doha and Emirates via Dubai. Another hub or other hubs in Africa include Kenya, I mean Nairobi in, for Kenya Airways, Rwanda Air in Kigali, and most recently, I think that was sometime last year, Uganda also introduced, but from Gatwick. So most people prefer to fly out of Heathrow. So
So
they'll
do I mean can you also get flights? Can you get flights direct from France and or from Europe and or United States? Is that possible at all? Or is it just basically you've got to go via another country to fly into
You have to
Zambia?
go via another country to get to Zambia finally. But what I must say is the connections are really seamless. So if you go via Addis Ababa on Ethiopian Airlines, within 2.5 to 3 hours, you will be out already flying to Zambia, which is a 3 hour flight out of there. If you go via the Gulf region, the connectivity, rather the transit times, are less than 2 hours. But you know, out of London into the Gulf, there is several flights in a day. So depending on which flight you take, the shortest transit time is about 2 hours.
Okay,
And
so
you
what
are
would the
out
journey
already to Zambia.
if I was leaving London Gatwick, what would be the journey time, a flight journey, the whole experience from
The
basically getting on the
total,
plane?
including transit into
Yes.
Zambia, the shortest is about 15 and a half hours,
Okay.
and the longest could go as high as 29 hours if you have long layovers, because perhaps you may have taken a flight out of London that is not seamlessly connecting well with the next
Do a lot
connecting
of
flight
people
into
do
Zambia.
stopovers? Do a lot of people do stopovers on the way then?
Well, some may do stopovers, but also when you get a flight that will give you a travel time of up to 29 hours, it would be mostly people who are concerned with budget, travel budget. So
Yes, price driven. Yeah.
those kinds of flights are cheaper. So it's a decision that you make because you think it works for you, whether for your pocket or
Economically,
the time that you have. Exactly, it's an economic decision that you make.
Okay, great. So,
So in
culture and
terms of
people.
culture and oh
Yeah.
yes. So Zambia has 72 tribes.
Wow.
72 tribes, that's a lot.
71 are
And
nasty and one's good.
so out of those 72 tribes, I speak comfortably five of them. And that means diversity within the cultural heritage for Zambia. And it also translates into several cultural norms and traditions. And in Zambia, many of these traditions and cultures, they commemorate traditions or celebrations that have been held for generations, so many from the past up to where we are. So these traditions or celebrations, which we refer to commonly as traditional ceremonies, are held annually in different parts of the country. So each is celebrating different cultural norms and traditions. I'll give you an example. The one that is world renowned, including others, but the number one world renowned in Zambia is the Kuomboka. So the Kuomboka literally means to come out of the water. So the king in this area of the Lozi people in Western Zambia has two palaces. One is in the floodplain, and the other is on higher ground. So the one in the floodplain, when we've had our rainy season for some months, our rainy season could begin either in October, late October or early November, and end either end of April or early May. So around March, that floodplain would normally flood because of the rainwater. And remember, the Zambezi River is passing in that area as well. It gets full, the floodplain gets flooded. So then this calls for the king to leave his palace in the floodplain to go to higher ground. So that journey from the palace in the floodplain to the one on the higher ground is a journey of about, that takes about 6 hours. And he is transported on a man-made canoe, or not canoe, boat, pardon me, on a man-made boat that has a capacity to carry up to 150 paddlers. And in the middle of that boat, they have a lounge where the king sits during that journey. And so you can imagine this huge boat with, paddlers, 75 on either side, navigating that flooded area to take the king to the higher ground. So this has a ripple effect of several other boats that journey with him. And mind you, on this journey, he doesn't go with his family, his wife, or children. They have their own boats, and each of these have their own name. So the boat that he's riding on is called the Nalikwanda. And all these other boats, where the wife is and the children, they've got other names as well. And then there are those other, so they also have sweepers, the way we have, sweepers going ahead of state convoy on the road.
Yeah, like on the
So
little motorbikes where they speed off in front.
exactly. So we have similarly those that go, ahead of the boat. So when you are waiting on the higher ground for the boat to arrive, because it's a huge spectacle. So the embarkation from the plane, from the point where he's traveling from, that is the floodplain, there's all those things that he does that mark, this ceremony. That's like at the peak of the ceremony, where it's now culminating to end. So the whole process begins 4 days before the sounding of the drums. The drums are called the Maoma drums. Well, once those are sounded on a Thursday in that week when he's going to migrate on a Saturday. So when the people in the area hear the sound of those drums, they know that it's time to pack and be ready to begin that remarkable journey on Saturday, the upcoming Saturday, so a day in between thereafter.
I didn't know anything about this at all. It's
That's
extremely interesting.
fascinating.
So
So
and
when
also,
he gets, when he gets to the higher ground, he's there are these activities. It's a full program, and there's usually a guest of honor. The guest of honor will range from the head of state or whomever the king decides or chooses to be the guest of honor in that event. And there's several things that take place. So it's a huge spectacle. This is just one but of many. In another part of the country, there's in the Eastern Province, there's a chief, a paramount chief, who is celebrating the fresh harvest from the farming season, because rain in Zambia also ignites farming, subsistence farming, because for commercial farming they do have irrigation and all those means of ensuring that it's going on throughout the year. But for a traditional household back home, they wait for the rains to come. And so when the first fruits in that farming season are ready, it then signals that ceremony that the chief, the paramount chief, must begin to test those fruit, the harvest from the fresh farming season, because that is a tradition that is age old, that was left by different generations back, many of them. So this has been upheld, and these are taking place annually, every year, at different times of the year because, as I mentioned, they are celebrating different cultures. So they happen at different times of the year. Some of them, the dates or when they can be held, they're predetermined. You can even already know what it is in the coming years. It would be the last weekend of a particular month. But the one which I talked about, where the king has two palaces,
Yeah.
that one, there is no preset date.
Because you don't know when it rain's going to come. So
You
that's
don't
the
know,
thing.
the rains will come, but you don't know when it's gonna flood. And if
Yeah.
it doesn't flood, or rather, the water levels in the river are not sufficient for that big boat to navigate that river, to travel from the floodplain to the higher ground, it's also most likely that the journey may not take place. But
Yeah.
in the past, we've had consecutively the events taking place because we've had good rains.
Well,
Yeah, so
that's
that's just an
fantastic.
example of many of these ceremonies that are taking place, upholding different traditions and celebrating different. One other, actually, I must mention before I
Okay.
leave this subject
Yeah.
is of the Chewa-speaking people. So the Chewa-speaking people, they spread across three different neighboring countries. That would be Zambia, Malawi, and Mozambique. So the headquarters of these Chewa-speaking people is in Zambia. That's where their paramount chief is. So every August on the last Saturday, they come as a unification ceremony from all these countries. They arrive in Zambia to celebrate their chief, whom they shower with so many gifts, and they outdo each other. So all these Chewa-speaking people from the three different countries, they come under different chiefs. All these chiefs are over almost, I think almost 200, if I'm not mistaken, chiefdoms that come into this ceremony to celebrate their chief of the Chewa-speaking people.
Wow. Well, that's fantastic. Okay, that's really, really interesting, and that's answered very intensely that question, which is great. So the culture is fantastic.
Are you ready to explore the world a little differently? With Pure One Travel, adults-only adventures meet style. Discover unforgettable journeys, small group experiences, and incredible destinations designed for curious travelers like you. From hidden cultural gems to breathtaking landscapes, every trip is carefully crafted to inspire your next great story. Travel deeper, travel smarter, travel with purpose. Visit PureOneTravel.com today. Pure One Travel, adventures with a touch of style.
So I've got another thing I want to ask. Is best time to visit, and
Yes.
also, and this is something sort of feeding off of that one, because obviously people will want to know that I can see that there's a couple of different times to visit here already,
Yeah,
but
yeah,
the
yeah.
best time to visit, and another one is for local Zambians themselves, right, that clearly love to travel and do things within their own. Where would they go within their own country? Where's the secret where the Zambians go? And perhaps the international tourists don't go. Is there a place? I don't know. I'm just assuming there
Yeah.
may be.
Sure. So I'll start with the first question in terms of when to go. So when to go is determined by what you want to go and do in Zambia. So I spoke about the destination being a prime place to visit for those seeking wildlife experiences and also the Victoria Falls. So if you're seeking wildlife, May through to October is a good time because it's in the drier parts of the month. But that does not mean you can't see wildlife outside that window. What it is, the difference is that wildlife viewing is prime and exciting and excellent in the period between May to October, and even better in October. So the only difference in October is that it is our hottest month. In some of these wildlife protected areas, the temperatures could go as high as 48 degrees. But remember, when you go game viewing, there's shade over the 4x4 vehicle that is taking you on game viewing. So the heat you may endure as long as you are under shade during the drive. And then in terms of the Victoria Falls, The best months to go are just after the rainy season, all the way up to August, and thereafter the water would have receded because part of that water is being used to produce hydroelectricity in Zambia. So in the later months of the year, it will be drier, but also it brings in the opportunity of the Devil's Pool. I'm not sure if both of you have heard of the Devil's Pool. It is a natural pool at the edge of the Victoria Falls. And most people go in there, plunge into that pool, swim, and really get close to them
Is that when they're
to
hanging over the edge of the falls and that type of
that
thing?
exact picture. That is the Devil's Pool. So that is possible when the water levels are not very high, and it's only possible on the Zambian side. So when you should go to Zambia, if you want to have the best of the Victoria Falls and wildlife, definitely if you do May up to about August, that's a good time because then you can see the best of for both experiences. If you are doing any of the other activities, really, it's an all-year-round destination. But like I mentioned, even with wildlife, so outside May through to October, I think all the way up to the time the rains begin, it unveils what we normally refer to as the green season in the wildlife protected area. So even the behavior of wildlife at that time is very different. And also the vegetation is lush and green. It's absolutely beautiful. But most of all, for those people who may want to take a safari that is more affordable, that is probably the time they must be looking at. Because obviously, with the peak, everyone is traveling, getting there to see the best of these experiences. So, in terms of where Zambians love to travel to, most Zambians love to take short trips because sometimes we get these long weekend holidays where you have Monday, Tuesday. So you knock off on Friday. You basically have 4 free days for you to either, catch up with whatever you need to do at your house or home, or take a quick break and get back just to break routine. So it will be places like Siyavonga. This is the beach, and it's a 2 hour drive from Lusaka, which is our capital. Lusaka, I must add, this is where the most people coming from outside into Zambia will land because this is where our biggest international airport is. We do have other international airports at Livingstone and Ndola on the Copper Belt, where our mining industry is big and flourishing every day. So, because these are local people, they have their buckies or small cars. They like to go to places where, one, they can easily navigate with a small car, and second, they can get there in the shortest possible time and begin to enjoy that holiday. So it would be Siyavonga, Livingstone largely, because even if it's a 4 to 5 hour drive for most people, because it has so much to offer. So people run there to, to go and have a good time in Livingstone. But also because of conferencing, a lot of people like to take their conferences to Zambia, small conferences of up to about 500 delegates because of, the huge possibilities around what to see and do near the Victoria Falls.
Just wanted to touch upon something we've not really mentioned yet, and is food. So, what kind of food do the locals make, and what sort of food is available in restaurants and cafes and kind of small shacks and things like that? So, yeah,
That's going to
so.
be a long answer. That's going to be a long answer.
Oh, well, I'll try and make it short, considering that we're wrapping up. So, Zambia, like any typical African destination, the cuisine is worth exploring. But what is indigenously Zambian is similar to most of Eastern Southern Africa. So, our starch is a thick porridge made out of cornmeal. That's predominantly cornmeal, but there's other meals as well. Meals are made from cassava, rice, from wheat, from sorghum, millet, all those. So people make that thick porridge from a flour of their choice. And that is taken, we actually take it using our bare hands. We don't use fork and knife. So
The
we take that
authentic
thick
way.
porridge very authentically. Yeah. So you would take that thick porridge with any of the proteins and a vegetable. So there's several locally grown vegetables. Some of them, they wildly grow and they come into vegetation during the rainy season, and loads of wild mushrooms, I must add. Yeah, so we can take this thick porridge with any of those items, vegetables, whether it's Western vegetables, cabbage, spinach, you can take that with any protein or even with vegetables on their own. It's also possible. But as a country, we host different cuisine from different parts of the world, and that brings me to, the entertainment or nightlife or basically just entertainment, especially in the urban centers like Lusaka. There's so many restaurants. One could be hopping from, one to the other. Except, when you have to eat, the stomach is only one size, so there's only so much you can eat at any given time. But if you are there for longer, you could do different cuisine at different times. But trying the local cuisine is a must, because other than that thick porridge that we make with vegetables and any protein, there's loads of wild fruit. So while the fruit bats in Kasanga National Park have come for their own share, we also have several in different parts, the mangoes, and these are organic because they are growing on their own in different parts, vegetables as well, tubers like cassava, like sweet potato. There's just lots. And how we prepare all these is very different. And you find that even when you compare with other African countries, we obviously have unique ways how we prepare these, just as those other African countries would have their own unique ways. And then we have lots of kettle. As a result, we produce, lovely biltong that, nearly every other home, if they want, will use the drying of beef as a preservation method, especially in rural areas where they might not be on the electricity grid and need to preserve some of that beef so that they can have it for longer before they eat it while stored. So there's just several that you can eat, but just to mention that you are not only tied to Zambian cuisine, but also international cuisine is available, Asian, European, Mediterranean, name it, it's all there.
Definitely have to have you back on because this is definitely going to be part one of two. We need a part two for this, I
We
think.
need a
But
part two. There's a lot I haven't
we do,
discussed.
yes. There's a
Definitely.
lot. There's a lot I wanted to ask, and we haven't asked either. So I think we should wrap this up. And it's been a fantastic podcast. I've totally and utterly in awe of your country and also your people and what the experiences, the cultural stuff that you taught me today is something I wasn't aware of. So my Zambian experience is
Thank you for the
expanding.
opportunity.
Yes,
You know
well,
something, and our listeners, I suppose.
yeah.
Is there any website or anything you'd like to direct our listeners to, and or any tourist board? What would you like our listeners to potentially go and visit for us?
So firstly, just to thank our listeners. I enjoyed your company, though I can't see you, I can feel you. Yeah, so to get more information on Zambia, they have to go to www.zambia.travel, and from there you'll be able to find, links to other websites that will give more information in order to make, better informed travel decisions to come to Zambia. And of course, I'm here based in London at the Zambia High Commission, and I'm readily available to share as much information as possible for you to make that decision or take the step to come to Zambia.
That's
Super.
brilliant. Any final words from yourself, Wesley?
Nothing really. I think to me, I think the whole point about doing these podcasts are to enlighten listeners to destinations they may not have thought about or have only slight knowledge. And I think what we've done today is highlight a country that clearly should be leading the way in many ways. I think Zambia is a wonderful environment, a wonderful place to travel to, by the sounds of it, having not traveled there yet myself. And most importantly, I think offers an opportunity to come back multiple times, as indeed we will with this podcast, come back multiple times on this, because I have a handful of questions that we didn't even get to cover.
We
So that
haven't,
really,
truly.
that
And
exactly,
thank you that you mentioned of another opportunity.
yeah, no, exactly. We'll have you back for sure. So back to you,
Thank
Daniel.
you.
Yes, I just want to say thank you so much, Doris. Obviously, like we said, Zambia.travel, have a look at that. It's been a fantastic podcast. And again, I just want to say thank you to all of you listeners for tuning in as well, because the podcast wouldn't exist without you. So hope you've enjoyed this one, and we will be getting Doris back again soon. So I just want to say thank you very much to everybody. Have a lovely rest of your week. Have a lovely rest of your day. And we'll speak to you all very, very soon. Thanks so much again. Bye-bye.
As the sun sets on another journey, we fold our maps, pack our memories, and get ready for the next adventure. Every voyage may come to an end, but the stories, they linger, resonating in our hearts. Remember, every destination is a doorway to a new experience, a new story. Keep exploring and keep dreaming. This has been Pure Vacations with your hosts, Wesley Baker and Dan Pratt. Until next time, let your heart wander and your feet will follow.